The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall read you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a little bit of couple of giggles to start our afternoon off with. How about life in these United States? Two pregnant women. I like to do yoga and an hour of cardio each day. It helps me appreciate the wonders of what my body is capable of right now. Me. I almost suffocated while trying to put on my shoes this morning. Training to become a census taker. I asked my instructor, a retired U.S. Marshal, if she felt funny knocking on all these strangers' doors. No, she laughed. Never after all, I used to kick them in. An elderly friend of mine, a staunch Baptist, told me that when she visited Las Vegas with her family, she was persuaded to try the slot machines. I asked if she said a quick prayer before playing. Oh, no, she said. I figured when I walked through that door, I was on my own. It was the first time my five-year-old had been to church, and she was very excited. After what must have felt like an eternity for her, to her waiting for the service to begin, she whispered in my ear, "What time does God come on?" I had just purchased a painting of the Last Supper when my young grandson came home. He studied it for a few minutes and asked, "What are they doing, playing poker?" The Healthy. Wellness from thehealthy.com. A diabetes cure. New research shows that some people can reverse what used to be a lifelong curse. There's one word medical researchers rarely utter about diabetes. Cure. Yet that's exactly what the word researchers from the Diabetic Remission Clinical Trial, DIRECT, recently used to describe the outlook for people with type 2 diabetes. This ongoing study of hundreds of people with diabetes has revealed that a powerful cocktail of lifestyle approaches can help drive diabetes into remission, meaning blood sugar remains in the healthy range without medication. The recommended lifestyle changes probably aren't nearly as drastic as you're thinking, but the results will be. Here are some areas to target. Food. Smarter carbs and fat, more protein and veggies. The old thinking about diabetes and diet could be summed up in two words. Avoid sugar. While it's still marketed to eat less of the sweet stuff, other dietary tweaks are proving just as powerful. Instead of banning foods, think about adding nourishing foods that can help steady blood sugar levels, fill your plate with produce. Researchers found that people who eat 3 servings of fruit per day cut the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 18%. Every daily serving of leafy green vegetables, such as lettuce, spinach, and broccoli, may lower risk by another 9%. Fruits and vegetables tend to be rich in fiber, which helps slow digestion, providing gradual and even rises in blood sugar while curbing your appetite. And produce comes packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals, which are thought to help ease the insulin resistance that drives diabetes. Smart proteins. Highly processed and fatty meats have been linked to an increased risk of diabetes, whereas leaner, minimally processed options such as chicken breast, seafood, beans, and low-fat Greek yogurt help to lower your risk. Smart carbs. Minimally processed whole foods can be your best thing. Think sweet potatoes, brown rice, beans, lentils, and corn, among other foods. In contrast, highly processed carbs such as white bread and sugar-sweetened foods digest quickly, sending blood sugar soaring. Smart fats. A diet high in monosodium fat, saturated fat, can help people with type 2 diabetes control their A1C, a measure of blood sugar, and also their weight, according to a study at the University of Cincinnati. Nuts, avocados, and olive oil are all top sources of monounsaturated fat. Unlike artery-clogging saturated fat found in full-fat dairy and in meats, and trans fat, the fat in many snacks and fast foods, monos appear to fight heart disease, replacing bad fats with monounsaturated variety combats insulin resistance, a key metabolic problem at the core of type 2 diabetes. Movement, revving your metabolic engine. In people with type 2 diabetes, the body has become less responsive to insulin, and the cells remain locked up to glucose, leaving it to build up in the blood. Exercise encourages the body to become more sensitive to insulin. Hard-working muscle cells that desperately need glucose will go to extreme measures to get it, producing chemicals that lower their resistance to the hormone. Reams of studies show that regular exercise has other benefits, too, including improving hemoglobin, A1C levels, lowering triglycerides and cholesterol, and slowing the development of diabetes-related complications such as peripheral neuropathy, the nerve damage that can lead to numbness and pain. You don't have to work out for as long as you may think to see results. Look Ahead, AHEAD, Action for Health and Diabetes Trial, one of the largest randomized trials evaluating physical activity in diabetes, found that people who move for 175 minutes a week improve weight loss and blood sugar control and reduce blood pressure and cholesterol. That's just 25 minutes of exercise a day. And it doesn't have to be done all at once. Sprinkling activity throughout your day, such as taking short walks after meals, helps to blunt the post-meal rise in blood glucose, insulin, and triglycerides. Want to lower your blood sugar even more? Most experts recommend adding strength training to your routine. Resistance training builds muscle, which helps to improve blood sugar control and decreases insulin resistance. Weight? Drop a little, reverse a lot. Exercise excess weight carries the risk of many health problems, and abdominal fat is particularly harmful. The extra fat with and around your liver can boost glucose production, making A1C numbers jump. In the pancreas, excess fat hinders the function of beta cells, which make insulin. This new understanding of how abdominal fat interacts with blood sugar means that physicians now see weight management as one of the most important pillars of diabetes treatment and prevention. The great news: it takes only a small amount of fat loss to turn blood sugar problems around. According to the DIRECT trial, for many people weighing more than 200 pounds, dropping about 10% of their body weight was enough to drive diabetes into remission. Other research has shown that even smaller changes on the scale, as little as 5% of your body weight, can dramatically improve blood sugar levels. Of course, there are other lifestyle changes that can also help reverse diabetes. It is important since elevated stress levels can raise blood sugar even in the absence of other unhealthy behaviors. Getting enough sleep can help keep A1C levels in check. Your lifestyle could be a powerful treatment for diabetes, perhaps even more powerful than medication. And best of all, it's something that's completely under your control. The best way to nap. Ooh, a sleepy article after that really interesting diabetes one. Naps don't just feel amazing, they are amazing. A study published in the journal Heart found a link between healthy napping and lowered risk of heart disease. The American Psychological Association points that naps can improve memory, learning capacity, and immune system function and mood. Sarah Mednick, Ph.D., a cognitive neuroscientist at the University of California, Irvine, and author of The Power of the Down State, explains that when you fall asleep, your body moves through stages that each play a role in health. Stage 1, the dozing off period. Stage 2, muscles, heart rate, and brain activity slow down. And stage 3, deep restorative sleep. Stage 4, REM, rapid eye movement, sleep when the brain activity increases and you're most likely to dream. The ideal napping times are based around this four-stage cycle. The 20-minute nap. Between 20 and 30 minutes is one napping sweet spot, according to Mednick, who explains that you get enough stage 2 sleep to switch your body and mind into full relaxation mode, aiding with memory. The 60-minute nap. Stage 3 sleep is time for your body to repair tissue, fortify the immune system, and recharge energy stores. But waking up during this phase can make you feel groggy. Most people start to move out of stage 3 after around 60 minutes, which makes a good time to set your alarm. And the 90-minute nap. A complete sleep cycle is about an hour and a half, and napping for a full cycle can be big benefits. But naps longer than 90 minutes can interfere with nighttime sleep and might even impair memory retention, according to a study in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. Not a regular napper? That's okay. Everyone needs to rest, but not everyone necessarily needs to nap, said Mednick. Run off cancer risk. Exercise has been known to reduce the risk of developing many forms of cancer. Now a British study has identified one reason why. Physical activity, it turns out, causes cancer-fighting protein called interleukin-6, also known as IL-6, to be released into the bloodstream, where it can repair cells and slow tumor growth. Study participants at higher risk of colon cancer had large amounts of IL-6 in their blood after cycling for 30 minutes than they did while resting. The conclusion: regular exercise, such as walking, cycling, or playing sports, can lower colon cancer risk by about 20%. A finding researchers believe applies to other cancers as well. Why we need more female cardiologists. According to a study in the Journal of American College of Cardiology, women with heart disease ended up in the hospital less often and had a lower chance of premature death if their cardiologist was also a woman. Their male counterparts generally underestimated stroke risk in female patients and were less likely to prescribe intensive drug treatment for high cholesterol and high blood pressure, leading to poor outcomes. One reason is that female doctors spend more time with patients on average and are better at picking up on subtle clues, lightheadedness, or brief episodes of shortness of breath, for instance, for female patients. Additionally, female cardiologists may be more likely to recognize symptoms that present more in women than they do in men, such as indigestion and back pain. But in the U.S., women make up only 13% of working cardiologists. To combat this phenomenon, researchers recommend encouraging more women to specialize in cardiology and also suggest increasing gender-specific education in cardiology training. And my cardiologist for the last, my last three cardiologists have all been women. Wonderful ladies. Eat cranberries for your heart. A British study found that eating the equivalent of 100 grams of cranberries, about half a cup, every day for a month increased blood flow and prevented the stiffening of the arteries. So don't skip these red gems when filling your holiday plate. How to fill up your downtime. Everyone wants more time to unwind. But research has shown that too much unstructured time isn't good for us because it can instill a sense of loneliness. According to a Penn State study, a good counterbalance is engaging in challenging activities that demand creativity and concentration. In the study, people who made time for pastimes, such as painting or playing the piano, were less likely to feel lonely than those who did not. And loneliness isn't just a state of mind. It's a leading cause of depression and triples the risk of developing dementia. Help for an Achilles injury. A ruptured Achilles tendon is often reattached with surgery, but that's not the only option. A study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that patients who skipped surgery in favor of rehab therapy had similar outcomes in terms of regaining their strength and jumping ability. The difference between the two treatments, then, is the risk. Researchers showed that patients who underwent surgery were more likely to sustain nerve injuries related to the procedure, whereas rehab patients has a higher chance of re-rupture. Any surgery comes with the additional risk of excessive bleeding, infection, and blood clots. So if you have the misfortune to rupture your Achilles, talk to a specialist about going the rehab route. Now, this next article is really interesting. This is a section called Hero Pets. This pet squirrel nobly protected his home during a robbery and even helped catch the culprit. And there's a picture of a cute little gray squirrel with a big fuzzy tail. Joy the squirrel came out claws ablazing, protecting his beloved home from an intruder. Joey isn't your typical guard pet. He's not a hulking German shepherd or a brawny Doberman pincer. He's a squirrel, a rodent. But he's certainly no pest unless you try to break into his house, and then he's a world of trouble. Adam Pearl found a baby squirrel orphaned in his yard in Meridian, Idaho. He decided to take him in and named him Joey. Pearl set an alarm to bottle feed Joey every 2 hours. Joey learned to use a litter box and graduated to a diet of nuts and greens. In just a few months, he became a fixture in the house. He'd let anybody pet him, says Pearl. Right up until the kid broke in, he would let anybody pet him. Joey goes nuts on a burglar. That's a terrible pun. That was the day Pearl came home to obvious signs of a robbery. Strange, snowy footprints tracked around the yard. His gun safe was scratched up. A few items of value were missing. He alerted police about the break-in, and Officer Ashley Turner came to the residence to make a report. Joey had run in the bedroom. It kind of startled her, says Pearl. Turner asked if Joey bites. Usually not, Pearl explained, but he is, after all, a wild animal. You never know. Hours later, Turner returned with a remarkable story. She'd identified a suspect based in part on the suspicious scratches all over his hands. She asked him, "Did you get that from a squirrel?" And he said, "Yeah, it kept attacking me and wouldn't stop till I left," says Pearl. The attack scared him, obviously, because he wasn't expecting to have a squirrel come flying out of nowhere at him, says Turner. So basically, he said he took what he could and left as fast as he could. The Pearls got their stuff back, and Joey got his favorite treat, Whoppers. That spring, Pearl noticed Joey's growing desire to return to nature. Joey became increasingly interested in the windows and even began playing with other squirrels through the sliding door. Pearl installed a cat door for Joey to come and go. When the sun would come up, he would go outside and play. And when the sun went down, he would come back and climb into his hammock and go to bed, says Pearl, laughing. After a few weeks of hybrid living, Joey made his permanent return to the wild. He was up in the apple tree and climbed down on my shoulder, and I gave him a nut and scratched his ears. Then he hopped back up to the apple tree and was gone, says Pearl. He didn't come back home that night, so I think that was kind of his last goodbye. Lulu the Diva. Our beloved heifer, Lulu, was a total diva. She was a food hog and a troublemaker, but also a great asset because she was the lead cow when the herd moved pastures. Cows like to follow a leader, and Lulu liked to lead. One summer, a wildfire broke out. While evacuating, we could barely see through the smoke or hear over the roar of the flames. But we knew that if Lulu could hear us, she'd come. My husband could see Lulu look around bewildered, but trying to prevent a stampede. He ventured into the smoke to get her attention. A few minutes later, Lulu and my husband emerged, leading our bull and 25 heifers to a safe pasture. If she hadn't been there to calm and lead the others, they would have panicked and scattered. Our sassy little heifer kept the herd together and likely saved many of their lives. And Lulu has only one horn. Big brown cow, but just as smiling. Milo. A trapped neighbor was afraid no one would hear her cries or help. Milo did. And there's a picture of a cute little beagle. Milo is a rescue dog adopted by 20-year-old Michaela Swift. But a beagle is also a rescuer. One morning in November 2021, Swift opened her front door in Silver Spring, Maryland, and Milo took off running. Milo ran to the house across the street. He seemed unsatisfied with this house, so he ran to the one next to the door, Swift on his tail. He started scratching on the front door, Swift says. I'm thinking, why is he literally trying to break into her house? She was embarrassed. Not everyone wants a strange dog on their property. But as she tried to drag Milo away, she heard a sound coming through an open upstairs window. It was a voice yelling, help. Hours early, around 4 a.m., Sherry Starr had risen from her bed. All of a sudden, standing there between the toilet and the tub, I slipped, she says. I went down hard on the tile floor. Starr is 85. She was stuck. I could not move at all, says Starr, who was wedged between the toilet and the tub. Starr was scared. I'm thinking I'm just going to die here, she says. Her best bet, she decided, was to listen for the letter carrier in the afternoon and scream like the dickens. For the next few hours, Starr practiced yelling, help, help, help. Her voice was very faint, says Swift. You had to be right at the front door to hear Mrs. Starr yell for help. Unless you were Milo the Beagle, who apparently heard Starr the instant Swift opened her front door. Swift called 911. Paramedics thought they'd have to remove the toilet to dislodge Starr, but they gave one last pull, and out she popped. Though bruised and battered, Starr declined a trip to the hospital. Swift has known her share of distress. 2 years ago, her mother died. She says Milo has helped her with her grief. That dog is truly a blessing, she says. Charlie. Looks like a black Labrador. A family of duckings was standard. He saved them all. Jorge Serrano and his dog Charlie were strolling through a park in Cornelius, North Carolina, when they heard a commotion near the pond. It was a duck, sounding distress quacks from an overflow drain in the center of the water. Across the street, about 150 feet away, a small crowd had gathered at the drain's exit. Five duckings had swum too close and had been sucked in by the drain's current. You could hear their frantic peeps from the pipe's mouth. The pipe was less than 2 feet in diameter. Serrano would never fit, but Charlie. He'll do anything you ask him to do, says Serrano. He'll deliver newspapers when he walks by somebody's house, or he'll carry flowers to somebody if you ask him to do it. Charlie peered into the pipe, listening intensely. Go get the duckies, Serrano said. The tunnel was dark, dirty, and scary. Charlie took a few steps into the unknown. He turned back with a look that said, just what are you asking me to do in here? Go in and get the duckies, Serrano repeated. Charlie faded out of sight, returning a few seconds later with a muddy stick covered in cobwebs. He handed it soapily to Serrano. Duckies, said Serrano. This time the message went through. Charlie strode into the cold, dark pipe. His footfalls faded. Serrano got nervous. What if Charlie got lost or stuck? But the flat-coated retriever did what he always does best, retrieved. Minutes later, he emerged, gently holding a duckling in his mouth. Serrano applauded him, then sent him back in. Five times, Charlie ventured into the tunnel, carried the duckies out one by one. Cheering onlookers reminded the baby ducks with their mother. I'd like to take credit for training him, but really, he's just a smart guy that wants to please, says Serrano. Talk about some lucky ducks. That's pretty amazing. Hobbit the Hotel Cat. I used to work in the graveyard shift at a hotel, and a stray cat would wander into the lobby, watch TV, and spend the night with me. Eventually, I took her home and named her Hobbit. While I was sleeping after a night shift, Hobbit yowled and nipped at me until I woke up. I smelled smoke. Firefighters pulling smoldery furniture from a downstairs apartment told me I didn't need to evacuate. The fire was contained. But Hobbit wouldn't settle down until the smoke cleared. From then on, I slept easy, knowing I had a friend on permanent safety patrol. Curly and Candy. Our Bichon Frise, Candy, and Curly are both rescues. We got Curly first, and he taught Candy everything. How to walk on grass, use the doggy door, interact with humans. One stormy morning, I put Curly into his thunder shirt and went to work. Candy bothered my husband, and he came in the next room. Curly was stuck to the floor, the Velcro from his thunder shirt attached to the carpet. We still laugh about what Curly must have thought as his loving mom stepped over him, and a little hero girl Candy was so excited to do something for Curly. Oscar the Scorpion. The rescue folks told us that our cat Oscar's litter had been hunted by coyotes. He was a survivor. Years later, I was in my chair, and the typical laid-back, lazy Oscar bolted for my feet. He was swatting with speed and fierceness I'd never seen of him. Then I saw a healthy-sized scorpion crawling around my feet. I guess those survival instincts are still intact. Mandy the lifeguard. And there's a picture of a kind of a ratty-looking dog, but kind of pretty. I have multiple sclerosis and use a wheelchair. One day I fell into the pool, wheelchair and all. Our dog, Mandy, went berserk, barking and sprinting around the pool edge. She got the attention of my husband and a neighbor, who both rushed out. But by that time, Mandy had already leaped in the pool to try to rescue me herself. Let's agree. Age is the acceptance of years, but maturity is the glory of years. To disagree. Age is the high price to pay for maturity. How about a little humor in uniform? The service is known for meeting out creative punishments. Here are a few as written by Redditors. After being caught staring at a squirrel while in formation at Officers Candidate School, one candidate was tasked with saluting every squirrel he saw until he graduated. I saw a guy forced to slow dance with a mop for 1 hour. After someone screwed up on the firing range, our drill instructor made him face the mirror and yell, "You're stupid. I'm not stupid. You're stupid. No, I'm not stupid. You're stupid." I think at some point the kid really thought he was arguing with himself. We made a private sweep all the sunshine off the sidewalks. It took him all day. During World War II, my Uncle Oliver was serving on a ship in the South Pacific. When the crew ran low on food, all the sailors had left to eat was spaghetti, morning, noon, and night for an entire month. At long last, they pulled into Melbourne, Australia for supplies. There the locals greeted them with a grand feast. All you can eat, spaghetti. And with that bright note, let's go ahead and switch over to Consumer Reports. And this is an interesting article, it looks like. The new world of cooking oils. Avocado oil, coconut oil, ghee. All the healthy intel about what's out there and what to use them. And there's a picture here of the different oils. And, of course, ghee is basically butter. Coconut oil, grapeseed oil, avocado oil, sesame oil. Excuse me, my pages are stuck together. Move over canola and extra virgin olive oil. Supermarkets are now brimming with an ever-expanding repertory of oils to cook with. Grapeseed, avocado, toasted sesame, glim, ghee, and many more. The variety is wonderful, but what the heck do you actually use them all for? And are they good for you? Some of the messages about health benefits and drawbacks of certain oils can be confusing. Coconut oil, for instance, has soared in popularity in recent years, with its proponents making unproven claims that can do everything from sparking weight loss to preventing Alzheimer's. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a hashtag making the rounds on social media, hashtag seed oil free, referring to the mistaken idea that seed oils like sunflower and canola oil are toxic. Then there's the question of price. At StopAndShop.com, for example, you can pay $5.79 for a 14-ounce jar of Nature's Promise organic refined coconut oil, or $10.99 for the same amount of Spectrum organic virgin cold-pressed unrefined coconut oil, almost twice as much ounce for ounce. All prices, even at the basic end of the oil spectrum, have hit record highs in the past 2 years because of factors including the invasion of Ukraine, labor shortages, drought in some parts of the world, and two wet weathers in others, says Mintak Joe, a senior research analyst at Grow Intelligence, an agriculture data platform. In short, a once simple shopping choice has become fairly complicated. But choosing and using and saving on cooking oil doesn't have to ratchet up your stress levels or harm your health. Here's the science-backed, dietitian-approved, recipe-friendly skinny on cooking oil. What's a cooking oil anyway? Cooking oil starts as a natural oil found inside a wide variety of plants. Seeds such as soybean, sunflower, sesame, safflower, and grapeseed. Fruits, palm, olive, and avocado. Grains, corn and wheat germ. And nuts, walnut, pecan, hazelnut, and others. Vegetable oil is usually soybean oil or a blend of oils like soybean and canola. This natural oil is squeezed from the plant using a mechanical method such as putting seeds or fruit through a press known as an expeller. Manufacturers may also use chemical solvents and high heat to extract the oil, or a combination of mechanical and chemical methods. Many oils are then refined using more chemicals and high temperatures. This step removes impurities and helps create oil with a more uniform color, a more neutral taste, and a better shelf stability. Refining has a downside. Exposure to high heat can destroy some of the oil's nutrients, such as an antioxidant polyphenols, says Dariush Mozafararian, MD, the Dean for Policy at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University. Some mass-produced oils may have antioxidants added back in after processing, but for a more nutrient-rich oil, look for the word unrefined on the label, or cold-pressed, which indicate the oil was pressed at temperature no greater than 120 degrees Fahrenheit. And choose oils labeled organic if you'd like to avoid those that have been through chemical processing. The healthier oils. Most oils contain roughly 120 calories and 14 grams of fat per tablespoon. But it's the type of fat in them that's important. What's really linked to good health is unsaturated fat that comes from plant oils and plant fats, Mozafararian says. Fortunately, most cooking oils are high in unsaturated fats with a combination of monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and saturated fats, albeit in different proportions. Those proportions matter because while monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats have been linked to a lower risk of obesity, cardiovascular disease, and stroke, saturated fats have been shown to raise blood levels of LDL, bad cholesterol. High levels can cause artery blockages and may lead to heart attacks and strokes. Olive oil is a great choice due to its high levels of good monounsaturated fats, antioxidant polyphenols, low amount of saturated fat, and vitamins like E and K. In fact, studies have shown that consuming olive oil can help lower the risk of cardiovascular disease, several types of cancer, and death from all causes. Two other oils for good health are canola oil and soybean oil, says Mozafararian. Both have ample amounts of polyunsaturated fats in omega-3 and omega-6, which are essential fats that you can get only through your diet. To limit saturated fat, the 2015-2020 Dietary Guidelines for Americans suggest keeping it less than 10% of your daily calories, you want to use a light hand with the coconut oil, butter, and ghee. By the way, ghee is pronounced G-H-E, is spelled G-H-E-E. Quick tip, if a fat is solid at room temperature, think butter, ghee, unrefined coconut oil. It's mostly saturated. If it's liquid, like a majority of cooking oils, it's mostly unsaturated. The right oils to cook with. Every oil has a specific smoke point, the temperature at which it begins to smoke and burn. Try to fry with an oil that has a low smoke point, like walnut oil, and you could end up with a smoky and possibly very dangerous mess. And then there's flavor. Some cooking oils have neutral one that won't steal the spotlight from your other ingredients. Others assert themselves a little bit more, enlivening the taste of your dish. A lot of the choice comes down to personal preference, but it's wise to keep a few essentials on hand. An olive oil for sautéing, dressing, dipping, and drizzling, canola or soybean for stir-frying, deep-frying, and baking, coconut oil for dairy-free baking or when you want a mild tropical note, and plain or toasted sesame oil for stir-frying or adding aromatic flavor. Most oil should be stirred in a dark glass bottle or container away from sunlight, but a few, noted on pages that follow, which we'll look at, are best refrigerated. Read on for more about the oils you're likely to find on grocery store shelves, with guidance from Monique Richard, MS, RDN, a national spokesman for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And here's something important. Three oils to avoid. Processed food often contain palm, comb kernel, and cottonseed oils. Palm oils, which reduce oxidation, extending their shelf life, are found in many foods, including ice cream and pizza. Most home cooks in the U.S. use other oils, but palm oils are a staple in African and Asian kitchens. Cottonseed oil is used commercially to give spreads their creamy texture and lend a rich flavor to fried foods like potato chips. All three are high in saturated fat, So check the package label before you buy. And palm oil production raises environmental concerns. Organizations including the World Wildlife Fund say that certain methods are leading to deforestation, endangering various species. Five versatile choices, oils for every cooking style. The best ones to choose for sautéing, roasting, baking, drizzling, dressing, and more. Coconut, 38 to 75 cents per ounce. Despite what you may have heard about coconut oil's health benefits, it's more total saturated fat than beef, fat, or butter. But it also has a unique, slightly tropical taste, a high smoke point you can use to sauté and fry. It can be a substitute for butter in dairy-free baking. Coconut oil can be pricey. Soybean oil, which also has a high smoke point but is less saturated fat, is a smart swap, although use some flavor. Canola oil, 30 to 40 cents per ounce. Canola, a type of seed oil, is high in monounsaturated fats. One review of the studies found that it can lower total bad LDL cholesterol and insulin resistance to tolerance, a tolerance to insulin that makes the hormone less effective. With a medium-high smoke point, it's great for oven cooking, baking, and stir-frying. Its neutral flavor won't compete with the other ingredients in a dish. Sesame oil, 60 cents per ounce. Plain sesame seed oil has a high smoke point, a light color, and a fairly neutral taste, making it a good all-purpose oil. Toasted sesame oil looks much darker and has a lower smoke point and a more intense flavor brought out by the seeds having been toasted before the oil was pressed. It adds a complex, almost smoky dimension to food. Drizzle it over stir fries, add it to noodles or soups, and whisk it into vinaigrettes or hummus. Sesame oil can become a rancid quickly, so store it in the refrigerator. Soybean oil, 9 cents per 32 ounces. Like other oils that are high in poly and unsaturated fats, soybean oil, sometimes labeled as vegetable oil at the store, has been linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Its mild taste and high smoke point make it good for high heat cooking such as roasting, frying, and sautéing, as well as baking. You can use it in recipes instead of olive oil or canola oil. Olive oil, 28 to 70 cents per ounce. It's an all-around health winner and versatile too. Extra virgin olive oil, often abbreviated as EVOO, is unrefined, thus best for your health. Deepest in color and most flavorful, with a pungent, almost peppery taste. It also has the lowest smoking point, so it's ideal for salad dressings and dips, and drizzling over bean, grain, or pasta dishes, but it's not as good for high-heat frying. If a bottle is just labeled olive oil, it can contain a blend of refined and virgin olive oils, which isn't as beneficial or richly flavored as EVOO. But the higher smoke point makes it better for searing, browning, grilling, sautéing, and stir-frying veggies or meat. Refined olive oils also may be described as light, fresh, or premium on their label. Plus eight more to use. Avocado oil, 40 to 80 cents per ounce. Rich in monounsaturated fats, this metal versatile oil can take high heat for sautéing, roasting, and stir-frying. It's also suited for both sweet and savory dishes. Try brushing it on vegetables before grilling to make a popcorn or making popcorn with it. It's pricey, so know that you can swap in another neutral oil too. Sunflower oil, 18 cents per ounce. Like other seed oils, sunflower seed oil is high in beneficial omega-6. Contrary to social media reports, omega-6 in these oils isn't thought to increase inflammation or cause other harm. It has an unassuming taste, and its high smoke point is a match for stir-frying, grilling, and deep-frying. Safflower oil, 24 cents per ounce. Another seed oil that can take the heat, safflower's neutral flavor makes it a good match for many dishes, cooking techniques including baking, stir-frying, sautéing, and deep-frying. Grapeseed oil, 20 to 30 cents per ounce. Made from the seeds left over from wine production, grapeseed oil has a high smoke point and a non-distinctive flavor that its other ingredients shine. Use it for baking, roasting, and stir-frying, say onions, garlic, or other veggies for an entree. It can be placed in recipes with another neutral-flavored high smoke point like oil like safflower. Walnut oil, 56 cents per ounce. High in unsaturated fats and low in saturated fats, walnut oil is also a good source of alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, a type of omega-3 fatty acid found in plants. Its low smoke point makes it best for no-cooked foods like dips and dressings, where its rich, nutty flavor can stand out. Keep refrigerated to prevent rancidity. Hazelnut oil, $1.29 per ounce. Ooh, that's expensive. This high monounsaturated aromatic oil can tolerate medium-high heat. Use it in baked goods or add it to savory sauté dishes and vinaigrettes. It's best to keep it refrigerated. Butter, 25 to 35 cents per ounce. Butter gives a distinctive covering lift to cooked and baked dishes of all kinds. It has a fairly low smoke point, but it's high in saturated fat. So keep that in mind when you're looking at recipes and considering replacing some oil or all of the butter with a healthier oil like olive oil or canola, refrigerated or stored in the freezer for several months. And G, 70 cents to $1.10 per ounce. Made by heating butter until the water evaporates, then removing the milk solids, G is a staple of Indian cooking. It hasn't been found to have any health benefits over regular butter, but it does have a higher smoke point, so it won't burn as quickly when you saute with it. Stored in an airtight container, and it can be refrigerated. And I wonder why they don't list margarine on this thing, because a lot of us use margarine for a lot of things. Are pricey oils really worth the money? You might wonder why one olive oil costs three times as much than the other, when they're both labeled extra virgin, and the bottles contain the same amount, or why some types of oil are much more expensive than standards like canola. One big reason is the mechanical methods, like the expeller pressing used to cold-pressed extra virgin olive oil, are less efficient. They extract less oil from the plant, so the producers have to start out with more raw material, adding to the base cost. And walnut, almond, and avocado crops, and to a lesser degree coconut, have been hit by drought and other challenges that affect the price of their oils. When to use them? You can saute your veggies in bargain olive oil just fine. But a cold-pressed artisanal olive oil might offer more nutrients and a more complex flavor that's worth splurging on and perhaps using sparingly. Here's how you save if you'd like to use specialty oil. Buy private label or store brands. They're not only better priced than brand-name cooking oils, but offer quality that's often just as good. Example, Wellesley Farms Organic for BJ's Wholesale Club, Kirtland Signature for Costco, Great Value for Walmart, and Good & Gather for Target. Shop at stores where cooking oils are permanently discounted. Prices at BJ's Wholesale Club, Costco, Kroger, Target, Trader Joe's, Walmart, and Winco tend to be lower than in other stores that have cut or eliminated their usual promotional offers. Buy in bulk or stop up on multiples of the same size. But check Best Buy dates because oil should be used within 30 to 60 days after opening. Time your purchases. Cooking oils are typically discounted in stores during the first week of the month. Consumer Reports Long COVID Recovery Guide. Anywhere from 10 to 30% of people who get COVID-19 experience crushing fatigue, breathlessness, brain fog, or other symptoms long after they first got sick. Here's what to know about the condition and how to find a cure. And there's a picture of a man walking along with a set of wire cutters on his shoulder after cutting the picture of the virus, a chain linked to the picture of the virus. During the first wave of COVID-19 in the U.S., healthcare providers reassured countless sick people unless they needed to be hospitalized, they'd be better in a few weeks. But many people, even some with relatively mild cases, were not better in a few weeks or even in a few months. The uncommon condition became known by a variety of names, including post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 or, more familiar, long COVID. Today, experts estimate that between 10 and 30% of the people who have a COVID-19 experience symptoms that occur at least a month after their initial infection. There could be now more than 27 million people in the U.S. affected by long COVID, according to the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. The effects can be debilitating. According to a Consumer Reports July 2022 nationally represented survey of 2,125 U.S. adults, it found that 18% of people who had COVID-19 developed or still had symptoms at least 4 weeks after getting infected, symptoms that were severe enough to make it difficult to return to normal activities. Although clinics have opened up to help these patients and more than $1 billion is pouring into the National Institutes of Health to study long COVID, that wasn't always the case. Instead, as in the early days of other diseases such as AIDS, people with long COVID have had to play an active role, first in convincing medical providers that their symptoms were real, and then in advocating for research into how to treat them. Now, while much still remains unknown, the combined efforts of early patient activists, committed scientists, and healthcare providers are starting to pay dividends with clear advice for patients seeking support and treatment. An emerging condition. In many ways, long COVID resembles the long-term conditions some people have experienced after other viral diseases, including dengue fever, SARS, and certain strains of influenza. For many of the first people to experience long COVID, the unexpected worsening symptoms were frightening and perplexing. Chimerale Smith, 40, was a Baltimore teacher when she got COVID-19 in March 2020. I felt this very hot, burning sensation in my spine, and I could not do anything without getting very winded, she says. I stopped being able to read sentences altogether. And alarmingly, instead of improving over time, her symptoms worsened. I ended up going to the hospital 13 or 14 times over 6 months in 2020, she says. I thought I was going to die. 2 years later, Smith's symptoms have improved, but she is still dealing with a number of issues, including fatigue and chronic migraines. To make matters worse, many with long COVID said they faced disbelief when they first seeking care, especially if they got sick early on or didn't have severe COVID-19. Chris Dansereau, 48, an information technology technician in Massachusetts, who also had COVID-19 in March of 2020, says his provider initially attributed his ongoing symptoms to anxiety. That's why many researchers now emphasize that despite continued unknowns, there's no doubt that long COVID is a real thing, says Kathleen Bell, MD, former chair of the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Clarity has emerged in part simply because so many people, nearly 600 million worldwide, have now had COVID-19, and many of them have developed long COVID. And widespread impact has accelerated research into the condition. In June 2021, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released guidance to help medical providers understand and treat people with post-COVID conditions. Patients themselves played a key role in developing that guidance, sharing their experiences as they fought to get long COVID recognized and help each other navigate the condition, says Fiona Lowenstein, who co-founded the Body Politic COVID-19 Support Group. Thanks in part to these efforts, some people are finally starting to get relief, including Desiraro. He has had several relapses and still has some blurred vision, leg swelling, and a little bit of brain fog, he says. But 2 years after first experiencing long COVID symptoms, the trouble breathing, low energy levels, and heart palpitations, that's gone for me, he says. And relapses come. He says, and he now knows what you feel like this is permanent, but it's going to get better. People with long COVID have cataloged dozens of associated symptoms, but a few stand out. Those include fatigue and breathing discomfort, as well as cognitive dysfunction such as brain fog, which is characterized by problems with memory, finding words, and the ability to focus. Other reported symptoms include stomach and other issues such as heartburn, constipation, and diarrhea, dizziness and rapid heart rate, problems sleeping, persistent loss of smell, though that appears less common in patients infected with the Omicron variant of the disease, according to Bell. The severity of symptoms also varies widely, says Benjamin Abramoff, MD, director of Penn Medicine's Post-COVID Assessment and Recovery Clinic in Philadelphia, and has helped develop clinical guidance for treating various symptoms of long COVID. For some, fatigue might prevent a regular runner from getting back to their routine. For others, it can be so intense that they can't even get out of their beds. Researchers are still trying to figure out the biological mechanisms behind these symptoms. Some think that SARS-CoV-2 could leave behind a viral particles or even hidden ongoing infection in the gut, for example. Others think tiny blood clots or damage to small blood vessels could play a role, affecting blood flow to the brain and other vital organs. The virus could also trigger an autoimmune reaction where the body creates antibodies that attack healthy cells, Abramoff says. And Bell says that everybody is pretty convinced there is an element of persisting inflammation, perhaps a reaction to the viral particles or damage from the initial infection. And there's a listing here of how long COVID affects us. Here are the symptoms most often reported among a group of 465 people in the CDC study who had COVID-19 symptoms lasting 4 weeks or longer. 34% had fatigue and weakness, 26% a change in smell or taste, 24% a shortness of breath, 22% a cough, 21% persistent headache, 18% problems sleeping, 17% joint or muscle pain, 16% cognitive dysfunction, I guess that means brain fog, 11% had chest pain or pressure, 10% had a change in mood, 9% had post-exertional malaise, and 9% had stomach pain. 9,130,641 to 27,391,922 people in the U.S. have experienced long COVID. How to find relief? Because research on how best to treat long COVID is still emerging, many patients have worked with one another in online groups and collaborated with researchers to share what helps them most. Here are suggestions from such patients, as well as doctors like Abramoff at Penn Medicine and Bell at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Start with your primary health care provider. With long COVID now so common, there's a good chance that your regular health care provider has at least some experience with it. They may also be able to rule out other health issues, provide referrals, and generally keep track of your progress. There's no one medication that will help everyone with long COVID, but doctors can try to address certain symptoms with prescription drugs. For example, steroids might be used for some people to tamp down inflammation, Bell says. Stimulants such as modafinil are sometimes used to treat fatigue. In small studies, doctors are testing whether antiviral treatments like Paxlovid, used to treat COVID-19, might inhibit the virus. But right now, you have to do individualized treatments, not one-size-fits-all, Bell says. Your regular health care provider may be able also be able to help by diagnosing long COVID in the first place. Some people might not realize that their symptoms are the result of a prior COVID-19 infection, says Smith, the Baltimore teacher. That prompted her to do outreach in high-risk communities where COVID-19 hit hard, and information about long COVID is less available. Look for a long COVID clinic. If your symptoms are particularly severe, multifaceted, or long-lasting, consider looking for a clinic that focuses on the condition. Care at such clinics is often led by a physiatrist, a doctor who focuses on rehabilitation, who can help coordinate it with other specialists you may need. But be forewarned that such care can be hard to find. There's absolutely a dearth of clinics or practitioners who have good hands on how to evaluate and treat post-COVID. That can mean long waiting lists. If you do get an appointment, there's no guarantee of relief, says patient experts such as Lowenstein. Still, some people are helped. Search for providers at survivorcorp.com/PCCC, which has a list of organized by patient-led support groups. That is survivorcorp.com/PCCC. Consult with a specialist experienced in your symptoms. Some people with severe fatigue come from long COVID have found that doctors who treat myalgic encephalomyelitis, a.k.a. chronic fatigue syndrome, can offer some help, Lowenstein says. Similarly, those with dizziness or heart palpitations may work with a cardiologist experienced in treating a condition called postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which causes a similar set of symptoms. People with brain fog might benefit from testing by a neurologist or a neuropsychologist. The idea is not just to determine what cognitive errors may be challenging, but also to identify relative strengths, says Stephen Flanagan, M.D., who specializes in brain injury rehabilitation at NYU Langone Health in New York City. That allows providers to develop compensatory strategies for identified areas of weakness. An occupational therapist might also help with brain fog by using a cognitive rehabilitation, for example. Multitasking can be hard for people with brain fog, Bell says. Learning to stay focused on one task at a time can help people avoid being overwhelmed. People who have lost smell and taste could try olfactory or smell training, which involves relearning scents over time through the practice with strong smelling items like coffee and perfumes. Check out the resources offered by Absent, that's ABSCENT, absent.org, an organization for people with smell loss, or consult with an ear, nose, and throat specialist. Consider making dietary changes. Many people with long COVID have tried to address symptoms by changing their diet. Dan Cerro, the IT technician, for example, adopted a Mediterranean-style diet. Once I got my diet under control, symptoms gradually subsided, he said. The Mediterranean diet, high in vegetables, fish, and healthy fats, which is considered anti-inflammatory, is recommended for long COVID patients by the British Dietetic Association. Some people notice an improvement when they eat a low histamine diet, limiting cheeses, fruits, and seafood and nuts, according to the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. Others have tried eating frequent small meals to help stabilize energy levels, a common strategy for people with chronic feed syndrome. Still, caution is warranted. No one dietary approach yet stands out as being especially effective, says Flanagan, although adopting a good well-balanced diet may help. And J.D. Davids, who co-founded the Network for Long COVID Justice, a consortium of patient-led long COVID groups, says to be skeptical about advice involving expensive supplements or dramatic dietary changes. Discuss significant changes you are considering with your physician or a dietitian. Stay active, but don't overdo it. Some people with long COVID have found relief through carefully structured activity programs or physical therapy. Such programs should be individualized based on a person's capacity for exertion, according to medical experts. This may involve a specialist like cardiologist prescribing a specific amount of activity. Guidance on treating long COVID should emphasize that patients should be careful not to push too hard. Working out too intensely may worsen symptoms, a problem so common it has a name, post-exertional malaise. Angela Mariquina Vasquez, a COVID-19 long hauler who is now the interim president of Body Politic, says that what happens to her? I could go for a 3-mile run right now. I believe my body with enough adrenaline could do that, she says, but I would pay for the consequences for a month. Experts recommended pacing yourself. I encourage folks to remain physically and cognitively active, but without going to the point of exhaustion, and building up slowly over time, Flanagan says. For Dancero, that meant gradually each day trying to build activity just a little bit more. If you have trouble breathing, Admiroff at Penn recommends, breathing exercises, such as pursed lip breathing, where you breathe in through your nose, then exhale through pursed lip for twice as long. Some patients may qualify for pulmonary rehabilitation, where you work with a respiratory therapist on techniques to help avoid feeling out of breath. Identify your triggers. Lowenstein at Body Politics recommends tracking your fatigue, brain fog, and other symptoms, trying to see if you can identify a trigger, such as staring at a screen or sitting up for too long. Find support. Many people find it difficult or find it helpful to connect with others having a similar experience as David's, the long COVID patient advocate. There's a whole world of people out there who aren't providers who will help you figure out how to live, he says. Take care not to send yourself on a worry spiral by focusing on concerning posts, Dancero says. Look for success stories and tips from people who say they are getting better. Get insurance to pay. One sign that long COVID is gaining medical legitimacy is that there is now a diagnostic code for it. That means healthcare providers can more easily bill insurers, and insurers may be more likely to cover it. Smith in Baltimore has fought to ensure that doctors link her symptoms to long COVID in her medical record, and that they know the code ICD-10 code UOU09.9. Even with that code, insurers may refuse to cover care if they don't consider it medically necessary, or if you exceed a certain number of appointments with a physical or occupational therapist. If that happens, you can appeal with the insurer, and if that fails, request a third-party review. One other potential problem. In response to the pandemic, Congress temporarily expanded subsidies to the people with the Affordable Care Act health insurance plan. But this is not permanent. It could be rolled back, says Catherine Hempstead, Ph.D., a senior policy advisor at the health-focused Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Making the subsidies permanent and expanding Medicaid are the biggest opportunities we have to make sure everyone has access to treatment, she says. Apply for disability benefits. Long COVID can qualify as a disability when it substantially limits major life activities, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. This means housing accommodations and other protections under the Americans with Disability Act may be accessible, and you may be eligible for employer leave. Qualifying for disability income can be more challenging, in part because long COVID is so new and poorly understood. Someone must show they have been or will be unable to work for at least 12 months. Historically, most people applying for disability income are denied. In a 2021 speech, President Biden acknowledged the urgent need for such services. We're bringing agencies together to make sure Americans with long COVID have access to the rights and resources that are due under the disability law, he said, so they can live their lives in dignity and get the support they need. To find more information and resources for people with long COVID, go to covid.gov/longcovid. Are you at risk? Anyone who has COVID-19, including those who've had it more than once, can get long COVID. But here is who is more likely to experience. Women. Research suggests women are about 20 to 50% more likely to experience long COVID than men for reasons that are still unclear. Adults aged 45 to 69. The risk of lingering COVID-19 symptoms appears to rise steadily from young adulthood to about age 69, then tapers off. People with chronic diseases. Those with type 2 diabetes seem to particular high risk of long COVID, as those who are overweight or have asthma. People who have had severe COVID-19. People hospitalized with COVID-19 may be at higher risk of developing long COVID, according to a May 2022 analysis of 78,000 patients. About 24% of the people with long COVID in that analysis had been hospitalized with COVID-19. By comparison, only about 8% of people with COVID-19 overall had ever been hospitalized with the disease. The unvaccinated. Getting vaccinated and boosted may reduce the risk of long COVID by lowering your chance of getting sick in the first place. And if you do get COVID-19, by lowering the chance that your case will be severe. But exactly how much protection vaccination offers is uncertain, with one showing a 50% reduction and another as little as 15%. People with greater exposure to COVID-19. Because of existing health inequities and higher risk of exposure to the virus, communities hardest hit by the pandemic, including Black, Latino, and Indigenous communities, also appear to be higher at risk for long COVID, says George C.'s Benjamin, M.D., Executive Director of the American Public Health Association. They may also be less able to get adequate care for the condition, he says. What can you do? The best advice for avoiding long COVID is the same as avoiding COVID-19 itself. That means making sure you are up to date on vaccines, including boosters, and consider wearing a mask in crowded indoor places, especially when COVID-19 risk is higher, says Kathleen Bell, M.D., of the UT Southwestern Medical Center. For example, she says, I'm going to wear a face mask every time I get on a plane, a train, or a bus. Let's close out with all in a day's work. I had my own a gorgeous silver jacket for a long time and was thrilled when my sister bought it for me as a gift. I immediately threw it on and strutted off to my job at a restaurant, where I paraded around the kitchen soaking up the oohs and ahs. But it was our boss who paid me what for him, a chef, was the ultimate compliment. Great jacket, you look just like a baked potato. Tried to type neurodivergences, but of course my phone remembers that one time I typed neurodivergences. That doesn't make sense. The actual text exchange proves that some wrong numbers turn out right. Hey, Dr. Park, this is Matt from Vascular Lab. I have a patient here with an external iliac occlusion with cold foot pain and numbness that started 3 days ago. What should I do with her? Nana, hi, this is Hannah. I think you have the wrong number, but I Googled it and I'm pretty sure you need to put a stent in her left radio article. Best of luck, Matt. Sorry, wrong number, Hannah. She ended up actually getting a stent. Took about 3 hours longer for trained medical professionals to figure it out than what took you about 5 minutes. Great job. Hannah, you hiring? After one of his second-grade flag football games ended in a victory, our grandson asked, if the NHL drafts me, do I have to go? My parents came to America in search of a better life. I thanked them for the sacrifice if I announced that I want to be an actor. They reply, oh, honey, that's pronounced doctor. And that's from Cal Penn in the book You Can't Be Serious, who is a famous actor. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadersservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.